And this is your third Ashes Test review brought to you by Runmaker Jimmy. John Boy Run, how you doing, mate?
I'm doing very well. I'm glad to be talking cricket with you.
We're talking cricket right here. That's cricket right here. What a test match. We got 5 days of cricket. That's what you want to see out of a test match, right?
Fifth day's great. I have such mixed feelings about, like, the whole series now. That England kind of, like, batted somewhat properly and made it interesting. It's kind of I root for Australia. I want Australia to win more, but my brain right now is like, can we go back and you guys do the first two series, not like dickheads, and then maybe there's just more interest in the last two, but Australia retained the Ashes. I think they're gonna try to clean sweep them because they could bring up anyone.
Yes, the clean sweep is on for sure. I think they're going to want that, Australia. But I think you said that perfectly. I think we saw some really good batting. We saw some really good cricket from England in patches. It's almost like it took them 3 games to figure it out. That you can't play baseball. You can't just play stupid cricket if you want to have a chance in Australia against Australia.
Yeah, it took some of them out. Like, it was just Stokes. It's like Crawley played better innings. Obviously, Will Jacks at the end there, Jamie Smith at the end, like that partnership. Granted, it was against an old ball and head Marnus, Cameron Green, because once Lyons went out, so it wasn't against it's easy for them to do that. Like, actually, like, taking Duckett in the other side here, like, hey, I'm facing Cummins and Stark with a new ball. It's a little different situation, but still. Yeah, just like a little too late, too much like learning too late for me.
Little learning too late. That's absolutely right. So we're going to go back to the start of here and how this carnival gets set up. So Australia is 2-0 up. England have a chance. England need to win this test to at least keep a fight for the Ashes. They're just not able to do it. I have some little stats. I went and did some digging on some of the scores leading into the first day, how it could have turned out. Australia posted 371 in their first innings. That's actually their lowest score batting first at the Adelaide Oval over 10 years. So over the past 10 years, that's their lowest first innings total when they batted first. The average when any team bats first at Adelaide Oval is 298. So they got more than that. And then when the visiting team bats first, they average 230. And England, in reply, their first innings, they got 280. So the stat is that Australia got their lowest first inning score at the Adelaide Oval in 10 years. And a visiting team, this is the highest score that the visiting team has posted in their first innings at the Adelaide Oval, which brought it down to the wire being kind of close in the end. If they had batted a little more properly, England in the end, they would have could have won this thing.
That's in all test matches or just Ashes test matches?
This is all tests, okay. Just at Adelaide. So some of those include India, West Indies, but this is the visiting.
And a lot of those were pink ball, Luis of recently, right?
Yeah, so all of them were pink ball, bar the one they lost to India. And they're all pink ball. So normally it's the pink ball test in Adelaide. This is the first regular test since 2019. But generally it's always the pink ball in Adelaide. So off to the par score. People talk about the par score. They didn't hit their par score, Australia, but they've managed to pull it together.
With Khwaja getting a nice knock at four. You know, that was the big thing. They chose to bat first and Steve Smith got a stomach flu. It almost seems like the more things get twisted upside down, the better it works out for Australia. Like, you might think Nathan Lyon getting hurt here and not being able to bowl in the next test is a bad thing. Why? Khwaja missed the first. They had to do a new opener. Marnus had to run out with Weatherald in the first one. Then Head had to open the second one. Now this one, Khwaja comes in at four. He's not done that before. It's like Australia has had the most amount of excuses to be like, something changed last minute. what were we going to do? They could like really rely on these excuses where England has like set this team and built this team for this series and have had their guys. Like they haven't had to pull anyone or make any changes that are like unbecoming of their plans. And they're just getting, it doesn't matter. So they'll call up a spinner and then all of a sudden we'll be like, oh shit, he's going to be the next Lions. That's great news.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Australia plays so far deep into their first class system that anyone that comes up is world class. We think back even to the last few games, we had Doggett come in, we had Nisa come in to replace a hole, and then they're gone. But they still did a job. Still did a job.
There's been four completely different bowling attacks. Or three completely different bowling attacks. There will be four now if Lions can't join. Hazelwood and Cummins were out. Doesn't matter. Neeser. I think they have six bowlers that have taken six wickets or more over the three tests so far.
That's gonna sound about right after here. Lions, he picked up plenty of wickets. Cummins, he was got three in the first innings, and he also took, I mean, he just finished off with three. Yeah, he took six. Lion took six. He took three and three.
Doggett got seven.
And
Neeser got six.
And he took it with, including a flapper. Yeah. So wickets galore. Wickets galore for Australia. And you consider some of the thing about England, they had to drop Atkinson. It took him two tests to get his first wicket. And Joffre finally gets five for. But yeah, doesn't matter. I don't think it doesn't matter who Australia plays. It looks like they're going to continue to win. There were some key partnerships I want to touch on in this test that really kind of started tilting the scales. Because test match cricket, the scales constantly tilt back and forth between where the power is, where the momentum is. And it got to start back up with Alex Carey and Usman Khawaja. They put on 91 during that first innings. A nice knock. Alex Carey ends up with 106, a century for the keeper. But that partnership with Khawaja ends up with 82, unlucky not to get the 100, but put in a big stand and really started things off nice for Australia. What do you think? You saw what we mentioned. Usman Khawaja came in. He wasn't in the squad when they announced it, but he came in and did a job.
Pretty awesome because he was getting some serious heat for the golfing stuff. He's old. He's out of form. You know, is he ever going to return? And yeah, he's going to return last minute. And I don't know, maybe there's something to that. Maybe that's what McCollum and Stokes see. And they're like, that's what we're talking about. No training, no pressure. Next test, they're going to use it. And they're going to tell the entire England squad, you're not in the starting 11. And then they're going to scratch all they're going to have six batters and they're going to scratch all six and then send them out there without any time to marinate any pressure and use whatever Khawaja used to get it done.
I think that's actually a pretty good strategy. I mean, they did go to Noosa. They did have a little bit of a holiday. Some of them did bat better, England, but yeah, I think just the surprise, the no pressure, just rocking up to the game, having everyone just kind of like, you know, not worrying about it. And then, hey, you're in. You're going to go out and about now. I actually have a really good story about this is that when I scored my first 100, it was such a crazy game. I actually was hungover from the night before. I didn't really sleep. My mom had to drive me to the game. When I got to the game, the captain wasn't there. So I was vice captain. I went out and did the toss. Wasn't even dressed when I went out to do the toss. I win the toss, decided to bat. We had three players not there, so I'll go open the batting because no one's here. If we go to field, we're a couple players short. And I end up batting the entire game. I see at the very first ball to the very last ball, and I score my first 100. Just totally being, like, not prepared. But that's sometimes what happens, right? You're unprepared. You're a little juiced up, and away you go. You score your first 100.
You know, cricket, as I continue to watch it and learn more about it and just kind of be in awe of like all the variables, like this is Carey's home ground. And clearly the ground matters so much. And, you know, they brought was it Doggett or was it, it was Nisa they brought in because he Adelaide or Brisbane's his home ground. Obviously, you build the man a statue. That was Bolin got chosen for that test because it was his home ground.
Right.
This is Alex Carey's home ground. He bats great. In the second innings, him and Travis Head put together a partnership, and it's Travis Head's home ground as well, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's that partnership in the second innings. Unbelievable. Head gets these 170. Yeah, he kisses the ground once he scores his 100. You know, all having all these family and friends there to do it on your home ground. They get to walk off the field arm in arm together. That was just a really good look for the game and a really good moment for cricket and Australia. And yeah, to do it at your home ground is incredible. You know, they're going to love that moment.
Archer came with some fight. He bowled faster. Like, that was kind of a fun storyline because he was carrying his pillow in the last test, getting a lot of crap for that. He got champed by Ponting and by Smudge at the same time. And then I loved Ponting's little, like, he went on a podcast and he was like, well, we've seen it now. You can't bowling that fast and then not, you have to come out the next game and bowl that over, that same over. And he, you know, he picked up five in the first innings and hit 50, got a 50 himself with the bat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was, I needed something from the England team that wasn't just like them getting ridiculed.
Yes. He really did stand up. We saw that little bit of fight with Steve Smith in the last test. And then, yeah, everyone's coming out saying, hey, come on, why didn't you do that the whole time? Takes five wickets, shows that he can bowl with pace and bowl with intensity and take wickets. And then he puts on a big partnership with Ben Stokes. Ben Stokes, 83, Archer, 51. They put on 106 for the ninth wicket stand and really got that nice total up for England, getting like 286. They were in a little bit of trouble there, but they put on this big partnership and they stood up, Stokesy and Archer.
They it was a ninth wicket stand, right?
Yeah, ninth wicket stand, yeah.
And Stokesy was just blocking everything, which goes against everything he preaches. They remind me so much of the New York Yankees, my favorite team. Because he said the whole thing, there's no place for weak men in my dressing room. And then Crawley came out and said, I hadn't heard that. But then Stokes came out and said, I let that marinate with the boys. And it's like, well, Crawley said he didn't even hear it. Crawley's saying the messaging hasn't changed at all. But then Stokes is out there batting completely different than what we know the messaging to have been, like what they tell the public. And that's like Aaron Judge is the captain of the New York Yankees. And when he got to the big leagues, he struggled so much. He hired a new hitting coach and told the Yankees, if you're not helping, step aside. This is what I'm doing. Wow. Hired a new coach who's banned from the facilities. The Yankees don't like this guy, even though he's turned him into one of the best hitters the sport's ever seen. But Judge's advice to his team is just keep doing you. Do what got you here. But he changed his whole philosophy. So it reminds me of that because Stokes is out there being like, play positive, play your game, like with intent. And then he's blocking everything.
Yeah, I mean, he played regular cricket, which is what cricketers want to see. We want to see contests and test cricket where you play out the day. You have to consider he was batting in 41 degrees Celsius heat. It was 105 degrees when they was batting on that day two. When he was batting, it was 105 degrees. And the whole baseball, what we hear they were wanting to do, he isn't doing it. And then Crawley, you know, it says that he didn't hear that. Well, he comes out in the second innings, Zach Crawley, and he does the same style of blockathon innings. He scores 85 of 151. But that's what they needed. They kind of needed that. And him and Joe Root put on a partnership of 78. They put up a good stand. Smith and Jax put on a good partnership today. And then Smith throws it away. throws it away.
That was frustrating for me, too, because I mean, the two balls before that, Stark put one right on his pads or even behind his legs a little, and he, you know, flicks it on or whatever you want to say for four. Then the next one, like third stump or fourth stump, like it's off, it's off, and he hits a cover drive for four. So he's done two great things with two different balls at no risk. They both were on the, they both were, you know, ground balls, as we say in baseball. And then the next one, I don't know if he pulled the length back a little bit because he, but he just tries to hit it over top, which is what Australia kind of, Australia's fielding really did bait them very well. But they had, and Cummins even said this, like when you have runs on the board, you get to, you get to use more patience with your fields and your traps. But they were saying, dude, if you're going to hit it in the air, we will just play where it, where you think you're going to hit it. Same place Weatherald called the line drive. I don't know if that's a cricket term, from Archer at the end. Like, they're just setting their fields and just saying, eventually you guys are going to hit it to us because you can't help yourself.
Yeah, and they couldn't help themselves. And that's just so Basbal-esque. They threw it away. I did a clip just before we went to play. I tried to make a mockery of Brooke, Harry Brooke, throwing his wicket away with that stupid shot. He played another stupid shot when they played when India played them in England earlier in the year. England only needed, in that game, they only needed 70 runs to win, and they had 7 wickets in hand, and they threw their wickets away. India ends up winning that match. Come to this test, similar situation. They get the situation where they have 200-ish runs to get. They don't need to do anything stupid, and everyone just starts throwing their wickets away. It's just ridiculous. You don't need to throw your wickets away. They had all day to bat. And it's just, this goes to show that it just doesn't work, just playing that aggressive style of cricket.
It's interesting because, and this is a small sample because I know that teams set tons of fields throughout the whole day, but They're setting their fields like, we're going to stop the single. If you want boundaries, you got to hit it over our heads. Eventually, you're not going to middle one. They did that in the England's first innings batting or the second innings. But to Travis Head, he loves the cut shot. They put all their fielders on his leg side and bowled him leg side and gave him his favorite shot. Opposite, like it's the opposite, and he scored 106 runs in that inning, and I think he only hit one boundary on his onside.
There was I think, and I know the shot you talked about, there was at one point they did put, I call it like the rusty Bluey field, where they put two guys gully point. They had this like weird triangle thing set up, and at one point he just hit it in the gap between there wasn't much of a gap, but he did hit that gap, and I was like, okay, that's a shot. And then it went back to the other side. I was like, okay. But Travis Head just did some Travis Head things. He just does Travis Head things. He is one of the best, and he's one of those guys that just gets you out of trouble. He's got Australia out of trouble twice. He's put on two really big scores here during this series, and it's helped Australia get this victory. Selection. So we're going to talk about selection. So there was a bit of a random, let me say, we had a random selection coming in. We had Usman Khawaja coming in last minute for Steve Smith. Cam Green is the all rounder that's built into this side. He is, of the two innings this test, 7 total runs. He gets a duck. He gets 7 runs. He was okay with the ball. He took a wicket with the ball. Cam Green, he also hurt his finger. I don't know if you saw, he had his hand strapped up coming off the big signing in the IPL to KKR, big $2.77 million man, didn't perform that well. And sometimes when you're winning, you kind of gets overlooked if you're not doing well, because you know that the team is doing well, but yeah. I think they're going to probably be thinking about Cam Green in there. It's a little bit suspicious.
It's surprising he hasn't come up even in the field, right? Like what he usually is good for, a couple wickets, you know, the long levers at gully. Like that has he made any catches? It's been Marnus, it's been Smudge, Khawaja with some.
Yeah, the balls weren't going to gully. That wasn't the area. They were going like that to that second slip where.
Yeah, Marnus, so maybe he hasn't had any opportunities, but it was hot. I'm interested. It was very hot. So he got more action bowling than the last two series. And I was kind of chewing on if that's because Smudge seems more aggressive in his captaining and doesn't care about bowling fatigue as much. Like, I think we would have saw Stark and Boland in early on day five if Smudge was there. But Cummins used green more. And I don't know. I wonder if that's because he knows the trials and the impact of being a fast-paced bowler and, like, making sure you're well-rested. Or it was hot. It was very, very hot. So you don't want to, like, overdo it. But I feel like – I could be wrong. I feel like green got more overs this – test than the last two.
Yeah, no, he's spot on. I think he rotated the bowlers very well. First inning, Stark 16 overs, Pat Cummins 17, Boland 15, Lyon 28, Cam Green 11. And then coming into the second innings, Stark 17, Paddy Cummins 17, Boland 17, Lyon 25, Cam Green 10. Travis Head bottled it today, about 15 overs today, second innings. And Lavishane got his one over in. Mana's got his one over in. But yes, I think, very good rotation there. Inglis into the side. With Smith coming back, you would think he would be the person that's pushed out. With Lyon injured, it also creates another issue here. Josh Inglis only gets 42 total runs, 32 and 10. And he's batting at 70. It's kind of weird to have your substitute batter or your specialist batter batting all the way down at 7. Kakeri bats in at 6. Green bats above him. There's probably a cause to switch the order up if Smith comes back, moving Carey up the order, putting Cam Green down the order, and you'll probably see Inglis will probably get scooted out of the squad, potentially.
Yeah, if Cameron Green stays as the all-rounder, you're not going to bring Webster in. You're going to need a spinner.
You're going to need a spinner.
But that's a one-for-one replacement with Lyon. That doesn't really affect this.
Yes.
Because Head's not going to, like, you know, you need another frontline spinner.
Yeah, and then their option now is with Usman and Weatherald. Weatherald, 19 total runs, an 18 and a 1. He technically hasn't performed that well as an opener. He has tackled this opening spot. It was originally designed as Weatherald and Usman Khawaja, and then Usman Khawaja gets injured and Head comes in, and then Head becomes the opener, and then Smith's out, they bring Usman back in. So there's a reality where there is a reality technically for Boxing Day test. If Smith comes back, Weatherald could get pulled. They keep Usman Khawaja. That also could happen. that's also an opportunity there to keep Usman in the side.
Because
Usman put up some runs. He put up 122 runs total, 82 and 40.
Let's go to my home ground theory. Where's Weatherald's home ground? I have no idea.
Queensland, South Australia, Northern. He's from the Northern Territory. He's from the Northern Territory. So he plays, I think he's played for both South Australia and Queensland, but I think he's from the Northern Territory.
So not, doesn't have one. Khawaja's Brisbane?
Khawaja's Brisbane. Yeah.
So that's passed.
Yeah. So there's no real Victorian that I can think of that would slide into either of those spots that is up for grabs.
I'd keep Usman in there and let him open with Head and see what that's about.
See what that's about. I think that's a good call. See what that's about. Or they reshuffle the order, and in Inglis would have to leave if Smith came back. That would be the other option. But interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. On the other side,
Smith should be back because he's just a stomach bug, and he's not. He's in the 11.
Right. He's in. He's always going to be in. He was just out on the concussion. It was really unsure on what happened, if it was concussion or stomach bug or it was nausea, not feeling well. But yes, the injury to Lyon will bring up a possible replacement. I don't know if they're going to bring in Murphy or one of the other spinners that is around the squad, but we'll see what happens for that test. On the English side, they brought in Tung for this test. He did quite well. He took four wickets in the first innings. Josh Tung, pick of the bowlers in that second innings for England. He bowled well. I really like his shape. I kind of like how he bowls. He bowls kind of nice.
So he'll probably stay. I mean, can they make changes? I don't think they can. They've been so... If they got absolutely blown out, if it was a rout, I think maybe people above, like the England board, is like, hey, try something new. We're prepping for next four years from now at this point. You've just lost and embarrassed us. But because they made it close, kind of playing proper cricket, Maybe they keep these same guys. Because what England's done is built a conundrum of, are we good, are we bad, or are we dumb? And people don't know what the answer is. And now that, this muddies it even more, because it's like, wait, maybe you're not bad. You've just been dumb, like we've all been saying. But sometimes teams do crazy strategies. Like, there's a baseball manager who invented the shifts, the defensive shifts. He did it like crazy when he was with a lesser team. He got hired to go manage the Cubs, a much better, more talented team. He didn't do any of those strategies. And they're like, why aren't you doing them? He said, well, I have good players now. I don't need to do that crap. So it's a little bit of like, sometimes managers and coaches come up with these things because they don't believe in their guys.
Yeah. I think that you just literally hit the headline. Are they bad or are they dumb? That's just good. That's just good.
Pope should not bat three again. Like, I think Pope, they're absolutely crazy if they bat him three again.
Yeah. I think he honestly is the one they would probably replace. I think honestly they take Pope out and they try Bethel. That's probably the best switch. And then it's hard to, the thing with Jax is he's good there for the batting in the lower order, but they probably might go with Bashir, the true spinner, to try something different, even though Jax kind of earns his spot. If they are going to say Jax earns his spot, move Jax up the order. He does open the batting in white ball cricket, so Jax could move up the order to three, and then they bring in Bashir in as the true spinner. Pope gets dropped, because I'm not big on Bethel either. Bethel's just as dumb as Jamie Smith. They both just swing and everything, young and dumb. That's just how I view those two.
That's how they've been taught, in a way.
Yeah. Yes. That's how they've been taught.
Stokesy, do as I say, not as I do.
Do as I say, not as I do. The team, this episode is brought to you by Runmaker, and every series, the Ashes gives us moments we never forget. Blistering spells, brave stands, and shots that echo through history. But with Runmaker, you can train you with lifelike pace with VR cricket in anywhere that you want, with real-time feedback, and you can take on sessions inspired by legends in the middle. This Ashes, don't be a spectator, own your moment. Runmaker VR, use your own indoor net facility in the comfort of your own home. You can train wherever you like, putting your skills to the test with real-life situations. Working on your short ball, working on your cover drive, your ramp, without real-time feedback, and you can also record your sessions and send it to your coach. Your journey to the pitch starts with Runmaker VR. Download Runmaker and save this Ashes with code Runmaker sub DEC-E6EFEA to get 50% off your first 6-month subscription when signing up before January 31st. Big shout out to Runmaker there. Turning points in this game. One single spell, one single moment in this game. Multiple moments. We talk about, there's a lot of, it's a balancing act. It's up and down. But I think we got to start with Travis Head's knock, really kind of like was the turning point in this game that really moved the needle Australia's way. Head, 170.
He's done it a lot. It's kind of solidifying himself as a game winner, match winner. Like, he clearly doesn't care about the moment at all, which is like, when you hear him talk, he just kind of gives off that attitude as well. Very like nonchalant and cavalier, but I feel like, I wonder if he feeds off all the chirping or like the noise, or if he truly just doesn't even hear it. And he's just kind of like, I think like he can turn on a dumb brain in a better way.
Yeah, I think he's just really good at just being himself. Like, he's like the classic being himself. Like, I think what Bazball wants to do, like play your own game, is what Travis Head does. Travis Head does play his own game. And Travis Head does go out there and scores 170 of 219 balls, or 100 of 60 balls in the other test. They want to be like Travis Head, but they just can't do it. He's just built different.
If it was truly play your own game, you'd have a diverse approach, but they don't.
Yeah.
So it's hey, play your own game as long as it's our game.
Right. Right.
And I think, baseball.
Yeah.
Do I get to answer? Bell, I think, is the match winner. Or the to answer that question.
You give me your single overall single spell. Who's your turning point in this test?
It's the Lions who goes out injured, but that 3 wickets in for 17 runs at the end of day 3? Day 4?
Day 3.
Was it day 3?
I think so. it's all a little blurred.
Day 4 is yesterday.
Day 4.
Because that ball to Brooks, he was doing the reverse sweeps. So he pulled it back and bowled him, and he was looking around. He didn't know how he got out. He almost was like, no, I'm not going to walk. I don't know what you guys are saying I got out for, but I'm not going to walk. And they're like, dude, his stumps are gone. Then he saw him and he left. Then, the slider trap to Stokes was unbelievable. I mean, that's as textbook as you want to get from Lyon. And then he got Crawley right after that. How did he get Crawley again?
It was the stumping. He pushed at it, and just kind of came out of his crease.
Yes, but that spell changed the game because England were kind of putting something together, and you're looking at Stokes and Crawley. Crawley was on 80 something. Stokes can, you know, he can score a ton easily. He can get through, especially the way batting looked on day 5 when the ball was dead. Imagine if Stokes was still at the crease to start day 5. That's a whole new match. Yeah. So that little, I think it was a 3 spell burst by Lyons there, was to me flip the match to like, nope, you're not doing this.
Yes. Yeah, I think I've flipped now to that is the moment right there. The three quick wickets, it really turned the innings because England, you were kind of rolling, you know, they were looking good. Crawley was looking good. Brook was looking good. They had done a lot of sweeping. They had done a lot of reverse sweeping, a lot of traditional sweeping. They were hitting the ball square of the wicket a lot. But the way that he played that particular reverse sweep, I just never want to see that shot. It's such a high risk maneuver. You got to change your hand, you're switching your grip, you're going to come down on the ball, you have to do a lot to make that shot work. And in a situation where you don't need to play that shot, if you have that shot back again, you can just block that ball. You don't have to play a sweep shot to that ball. Diddy Mull ends up. He was so confused. He had no idea. He gets his like bold. It's like bold.
Pretty wild. And I want to just on the stumping, just remind me, credit to Carey. He, you saw him play up in the second test, with Doggett bowling, and he played up at the stumps to keep him trapped at the crease. He did it with Boland a lot on day 4. And I was like, my goodness, that is a long day. And he also spent a lot of time in the crease himself this series. So I know they gave him man of the match, but I don't know if they talked about that. But him playing at the stumps with Boland just rifling bullets at him is pretty wild to me.
Yeah, keeping up to the stumps like that is pretty impressive. And that is why this segment is brought to you by Runmaker. And this is the player of the test. The player of the test is Alex Carey. He scored 106 in the first innings, 72 in the second innings. He took 6 catches. Just the keeping is unbelievable from test to test to test, batting. He's actually got the most runs for Australia this year in the whole team. And he just put on a beautiful innings. I'm going to go back to the first innings, 106 off 143. What a century. What a way to bat at his home ground. Home ground century.
I was watching this laying in bed, watching on my phone. He just right from the jump started hitting the ball, right? Like I feel he didn't ease in.
No.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Just comfortable. He just felt so comfortable out there. Just looked
his
good.
Home ground. He's probably, he's got the sight lines down, you know, doesn't even care about the fielders. He knows where to aim, what sections, what seats, all that stuff.
So Alex Carey is coming off a first class grand final win there. So South Australia, they won the first class. They won the Sheffield Shield, and they played. They didn't play at the Adelaide Oval, but South Australia won the first class series in Australia this year. So, you know, that home South Australian spirit, he kind of had that already. The crowd would have been, you know, that kind of helping him have all the emotion there to get all the way to that century. And yeah, just looked good. He just looked real good. And then in the second innings, kind of unfortunate not to go all the way through with it to get the 100. I was thinking there that he would have back-to-back hundreds. There was a chance there for that. But not to be, 72, but amazing with the gloves, as you mentioned. Amazing with the gloves. Up to the stumps, gets a stumping. You don't see that many stumping. You see one every now and again, maybe one every other test. But I kept all my life. And when I saw the radar of Scotty Boland today, bowling 135 and a half, and he's keeping up to the stumps, I'm like, mate, wow.
I did a double take. I was like, oh my God, that's and it really messes with England because they want to be aggressive and they're in a situation where they're under the clock. They can't draw because then they lose the Ashes. They have to win to retain. You know, if this is the second match, they might draw it and say we'll win the later ones. If that's even in their blood, which maybe now it is. You saw so much more blocking this test than the last two. But they can't play aggressive if you can't charge on Boland or, you know, do something fun when Carey's right there. He did take the bails off at the end of the day 5-2 before when there was kind of getting like a little desperate. He swiped him clean off for someone. He wasn't out, but it was like he wanted it. It's always a good feeling moment.
It's always a good feeling. And it's so crazy. Like, I don't know how to put it in context for people that know baseball, people that do baseball catching. In baseball catching, you get to have that little bit of a conversation with the pitcher. You kind of know what's coming. You kind of expect where it is. And you get full vision. The batter is never really impeding you of your line of sight. In cricket, the ball is going to bounce. And a lot of the times, Carey had some amazing catches going down leg side. So you lose vision of the ball as you pass the bat. You pass the batter, and then you have to put your gloves where you think the ball is going to be, and then have the be able to take it at 100. Well, it's 85 clicks, and then be able to come back to the stumps and take it. It's just it's a very skillful thing to do.
Crazy hard. I love catching in baseball, so I enjoy wicket keeping as well for that reason.
Yeah.
It's a more grind of a day than anyone else.
It is, especially on your legs. You think about all the balls that were bowled. He has to squat every time. There was actually really good vision of him warming up, which I might put some clips together later of that. They had him with the slips cradle and just being in that nice wide position and getting the rhythm going. And he could go down as one of the best to ever do it. I grew up watching Adam Gilchrist, Brad Haddin, you know, they go down as, you know, some of the best keepers ever, but Alex Carey is, you know, fairly early, still kind of early into his career. I think he's going to go a long way. And by the end of his career, be up there with one of the greatest keepers ever. And not only greatest keepers ever, but keeper batters ever. He's also putting runs on the board to like make his name in the history books for one of the best keeper batters, not just in Australia, but of all time. This test wasn't short of controversy. Snicker.
Ooh, yeah.
Good old Snicker controversy. How is that one? Now, I think you had a really good point, which I think you might change the game for cricket forever. You might have the answers here for cricket. I want to let everyone know Jimmy's got the answers right here. I'm going to sit back and dial in.
If you don't know, if you've never seen it, if you've watched this and you're a cricket fan, you don't know who I am, that's amazing. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoy everything we're building and doing here and what Adam is building. But I analyze like baseball video like crazy because I make videos. I'm very in the weeds on the technology and the cameras and they have like HFRs, they call them, high frame rate cameras in baseball. And each MLB game has six or eight high frame rate cameras. And it bothers me a lot when I make videos about cricket because the replays are not in 60 frames per second. They should be in 120 frames per second. Should be able to see that ball. You should be able to see the ball, and then you hit the next arrow. You know, you go to the next frame, and the ball has only moved a little bit. Not, it's in a whole new spot. Like, not from like here to here. It should be like here to here. That doesn't make sense. But so I'm always confused because audio waves don't do that. You can't miss frames. So like, it looks like on the one to, I forget who it was when they said it hit the edge of the bat. Then
Jamie Smith, I'm pretty sure.
Jamie Smith. When they rock that replay, it's clearly missing like 5 frames from what I would expect to see from a baseball broadcast. The audio waves are still going to be there. You don't skip audio waves. And I was reading about this. I Googled, like, why don't they use them? And they just said the broadcast, it's expensive. And I saw Fox commentary or one of the Australia
7.
Yeah, one of them was saying, like, ICC has to do something. Either they have to pay for these cameras or they have to tell the broadcast, if you want to buy the rights, you need to use these cameras, because they're paying so much for the rights. That's what they were saying. They're like, you're paying so much for the rights, so they're trying to save money elsewhere. But it blows my mind, a sport that hinders on replays and reviews so much does not use high frame rate cameras. And you would only need them, you need 4 of them, you need 2 angles at each stump, and you'd get this shot. So in my point of view, I'm like, it hit his bat. The audio wave isn't out of sync. You're just missing frames on the video. And there's clearly a frame, like the ball is in front of his bat and then they rock it and the ball's behind his bat. That's not how like frames work. It's not quicker than speed of light or whatever. Like, so that's my perspective on it, is I do think that hit the bat, because audio isn't going to lie unless, you know, you get the keeper clapping or someone that's like at like the point, like, you know, stomping. But I think that probably hit the bat and they just don't have the frame that shows it. I can't believe they don't have these high frame rate cameras.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. And when you told me that, it was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And I feel like this is kind of new in regards to this. I don't feel like we ever had this problem. I feel like when you saw the edge, it all synced up normally. I don't know what kind of happened. They did used to have what was called hotspot, which was infrared technology, which saw the friction mark make on the bat when the ball struck the bat. It caused a little bit of friction. It goes a little hotter. You saw the mark light up. That was banned. It got banned or got taken out of the game in late 2010s-ish. And we haven't really seen it ever again. Lots of what I heard was kind of like military grade equipment, and they didn't want a lot of people having it, or they couldn't get everyone to have it, so they didn't let anyone have it, that kind of thing. But the other issue, one of the real issues that I found with this whole thing is common sense not prevailing, because the third umpires were looking at Snicko first. And I think that's the terrible thing to do. When you just saw the regular replay on the regular replay, you could clearly see the ball hitting glove. For the first incidence has happened, the hits the glove and the glove has a little wobble. You clearly see that the ball struck the glove, but they go to Snicko and Snicko says there's no snick. Okay, well then you can hear him in the audio. He goes, okay, Snicko, there's no bat on glove. Hang on a minute. If you just watched the first replay that you showed everyone on the TV, you see the glove wobble. It hits the glove, and then with the frame rate. You see, this is the funniest one. You see the ball disappear because it's somehow gone now behind the glove. It was in front of the glove, and then it was behind the glove. Hits the helmet, no snicker. But I'm like, just watch the real replay. Make kind of common sense.
It's hard. I was talking about the next one where they said it did hit, but I understand that one too. The glove is hard too, because he's also squeezing and like stopping his hand, so there's going to be movement there. I mean, they're tough calls. Like, you cannot do them. If you want to get them right, you know, like, this is where sports are in a weird spot, because before technology, everyone just kind of shrugged and been like, whatever the umpire said, that's it. There's no way we can prove him wrong.
Yeah.
And now there's ways we can prove him wrong. And it's like, but you have to use the best technology available. Yes. I just researched why hotspots stopped, and it was the 2013 Ashes. and there were like clear edges that didn't come up. And then there was controversy because the England batters were using silicon tape on their edges, which diminished it showing up on hotspot.
Oh, wow.
This article says.
There you go. That could be a difference. They do put that silicone tape on the that's kind of newish, but yeah, that's there you go. Yeah, we had it for a little bit. I loved it when it was there. It was good to watch as a viewer. It was fun to watch as a viewer, but not there now, and they don't like it. So, Snicker, they might change it. They might not change it. They might go to Ultra Edge. I think that's the other company that happens in England and in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's just a different company.
Yes. Yeah, so I always refer to the whole. I honestly thought the whole thing was just called Snicko, being from Australia, and then I saw it say Ultra Edge. I'm like, oh, that's just the English.
I thought Ultra Edge was like the actual name, and Snicko was Australia's cute nickname for it.
Ah, yes, that makes more sense. Australia is big on their cute nicknames.
Yeah.
So a little bit of legacy and what we think here, like what will this Ashes be most remembered for at this point? What are we going to remember out of this Ashes?
The death of Bazball. I think that's probably what this Ashes gets referred to as.
This is the death of Ashes. The Ashes, what was that? 1982, the start of 1882, the start of the Ashes, and 2025 is going to be the death of Bazball.
Yeah, I mean, they just had their closest match. I mean, they should have won the first test.
Yeah, take us back. 99 up, you're ahead by 99 runs
and 3 days to bat.
Yeah, that's
like, if they batted how they did today in that innings in the first test, maybe Australia pulls something out of their ass and wins it. But like, they have a pretty good lead. So Bazball is all about process over results, which a lot of sports have come to, but ultimately results is all you get judged by. So I hate that. But they can't even say, like, I feel like the last Ashes, England is basically like, well, the rain out in the fourth test, we would have won that, and we would have won, you know, we drew the series 2-2, so Bazball worked, all this stuff, and they don't have any of that now. They have, hey, we took it the farthest, we got the closest when, you know, half the lineup changed completely. So yeah. If they don't admit defeat on it, it's a little nutty.
Yeah, and I think you said it perfectly. Are they bad or are they dumb? I think that England's batters are some of the best batters that are going around. Like, just as in batting. They are very good batters. They just do stupid shit. They just do stupid stuff. And I was very critical. I've always been very critical. People say I've been biased during this test match. If you watch my coverage of Border Gavaskar Trophy, I was hammering on Australia hard because they were batting terribly against India. India came so close to beating them. They weren't playing well. Think about Lavisham gets dropped after that series. They dropped their opener. They brought in Sammy Consist. He was a little bit of a savior for them. They had McSweeney come in. Khawaja wasn't getting runs. Smith wasn't getting runs. It was a calamity for Australia, and they were saved by their bowlers. They had their four-string bowlers bowling all the time. They had Lyon, Stark, Cummins, and Hazelwood there to help them knock India over. And I was very judgmental on how Australia were batting. I think they got it wrong. They had made some bad decisions. Coming into this series, they were still up in the air. They had picked Weatherald was their option. And, you know, some of the batters in the lineup haven't been batting all that well, but they've got themselves out of trouble here because England has thrown it away. You know what I mean? If England has batted proper cricket, like you said, they had the lead in the first test. They batted well in parts. We could be talking about a whole different situation here, which could be a 2-1 to England situation right now. They had the opportunity to win game one, and they had an opportunity here if they batted properly to get this thing a little closer.
Yeah, last summer for Australia, it was there's no depth. We have no depth. They didn't know who to go to. Then no one was ready. They had no depth. And that was on the batting side. And they haven't really had to test that a lot. Weatherald has worked out enough for them not to scramble a second time. And you have had now Smith return to form. Marnus has returned to form. Head's carried. Carey has done great. You know, it's just Green that is like can Webster do what Green's doing? Yeah, probably. Could he maybe do better? It's a coin flip, I think. But on the bowling attack, they've had to test the most depth, and everyone's getting wickets. So does that mean that England is awful, or does that mean Australia suddenly has all this depth? I don't know.
I think the depth for Australia is quite deep. The first class system runs very deep. They have many, many options, especially in the bowling attack. Because if you think about Boland, Scotty Boland is meant to be the backup guy.
It's true.
He's meant to be the backup guy. And then we went to the next backup guy, Neeson. We went to the next backup guy, Doggett, who's more like an in-form guy than the next backup guy. But they went to their backup guys. And England don't have the star power in the bowling department. Archer took his fifer. But there's just, if you compare when you watch an over of Mitchell Starc and then you watch an over of Jofra Archer, the impact is different. Like, Starkey's just hitting the pitch different. He's slinging the ball in. It's up towards that 140 constantly, 145, up towards that 150 constantly. And Archer just sometimes just trundles in and rolls the arm over. It's not impactful. He was at one point against Smith in that other test and got points, but it's consistent. The consistency isn't there. And the bowlers for England are just average. They're just average bowlers. They're good, but they're not great.
Yeah, none of them open my eyes and make me pop. The only one is like when Stokes sends himself in, because that's kind of like the same vibe of a dad who is kind of saying, like, I'm sick of watching your shit. I'll save us again. And like angrily grabs the ball and bowls an over. And everyone in the field is like, I hope he does. And that's the energy whenever Stokes is like, I'm bowling now.
Yeah.
I'll fucking do it again. Fine. I think he only got one wicket this series, so that's the difference.
He was very disappointed when he didn't get a wicket. He went up for a wicket. They gave it out, and then they overturned it. And I made a point actually today that I think that umpire from one end, almost every decision was wrong. He had so many outs, not outs were overturned, and so many not outs given out. And then he was involved with all of the Snicko things too. But yeah, Stokesy wasn't getting it done with the ball, and potentially a little groin injury. He was off the field for a little bit. He was out in the sun all day for that 80 that he had. But yeah, England, are they bad or are they dumb? I think that's going to be our mantra here. Australia's triumph. Where does this earned clinching victory sit amongst Australia's greatest Ashes moments? I don't know. How many of these things have you seen, Jimmy? Where does it sit for you? How do you feel watching this?
The first Ashes I watched were when Boland had his moment, but I really didn't know what I was watching. Like, I didn't understand the depths of Test cricket at all at that point, at all. The last Ashes in England, I watched because in America, time zone wise, time of year wise, that's a much better watch. Summertime, I'm usually on vacation at the beach, and I get to put it on all day and watch it how Australians watch their home series. So I watched all of that one. I mean, that was better because it was closer. I don't think this ultimately. Some Australians got to be like, I don't care about the fourth or fifth test anymore. And that's not a victory you remember in 50 years time.
Yeah, I think obviously they win it here. I think that at this point, Australia's entire mindset is 5-0.
Yeah.
They just switched to 5-0 now. They're like, and now it's almost like if we don't get 5-0, they might have lost.
Well, imagine if like they decide that they're going to play proper cricket and they get like Pope and Duckett on board as well. And then they win the next two, I don't think it's going to happen at all. But imagine if they did, the moral high ground that they would be like, we were better. We just had to change our philosophy. And that would be crippling if you were Australia, because you're 3-0.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I think that's the way it's going to sit. We have, I'm going to roll with two questions. I did ask, the followers, if they had questions for the pod. Two here, I'm going to read them out. Is Bazball destined to go down as one of the most hilarious bad decisions of English cricket? 10 years now since England have held the Ashes, this series they cared most about. Is it the most hilarious bad decision in English cricket? You might have, I don't think I might know the answer.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it gets them victories against lesser opponents. So
that's yes. Yes, that's a key takeaway. Yeah,
baseball's fine if it has an on-off switch, but then I think at that point that's just good cricket.
Exactly. I think you hit the nail on the head there. And then another question: considering that that's cricket's first Ashes is looking one-sided, what's your favorite historical match with a two or three draws and a high-stakes fifth Test? So I was thinking about this. And it is kind of rare that we do get many, many draws and it all comes down to 5 days. But the first, and for me as an Australian, to get it down to a five test series, it's got to be at the SCG, because they always play the final game at the SCG. The second to last game is at MCG for Boxing Day. New Year's Test is at the SCG. And so the thing that just came to mind was Michael Clarke bowling to India in 2013. He came on in the final over. They needed to take three wickets, and he goes wicket, wicket, and then he gets dot ball, and then he gets a wicket with the final ball to win the game at the SCG. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to show you this. In that test, he also scored a 200, Michael Clarke, and it was his first over that he bowled. They just basically threw him out there as a Hail Mary, and he takes three wickets in the final over to win the game. We'll have to show you that one, and maybe that one deserves a breakdown, because that is, it's absolute scenes it is. And I remember watching that, and that's probably the memory of it. Something going to a five-day test for Australia, getting the win in the final over of play.
That's incredible. There's a new documentary on Amazon that's just a history of Australian cricket. I watched the first episode, but it was in the 70s. It's like an 8-episode documentary, so that's probably one of the episodes in there. I'll watch it.
Yeah, I'll check that out. So yeah, we love that. That's how you started, right? You started by watching the Ashes
the test
on it.
Yeah,
on
yeah, I watched the test, and that got me like kind of back into because I lived in Australia, so I just liked like Australia stuff and fly on the wall. But yeah, I didn't know what they were kind of talking about when I watched the first season of Test. Like, I didn't know the three formats. Like, I didn't really know anything at that point. That was 2020. It was pandemic.
Yeah. And look at you now. You're ICC commentator of the World Cup on the pod here with us tonight. You're watching the Ashes up late. It's very late, almost midnight, staying in. Jimmy, I very much appreciate you being here on That's Cricket. You got to give us a good sign off here. You got to give us a good That's Cricket sign off, Jimmy.
Bazball, it's not cricket.
And that's cricket.